We often start our conversations talking about shortages, but today I wanted to start with geopolitics. It's part of our conversation 9 times out of 10, but now it seems really relevant. And as you mentioned off camera, people are already asking you questions about the impact of the conflict in Israel. What are you seeing there? Let's touch on that before we dig into the broader geopolitics issue.
So your audience is probably pretty familiar with that. There are a few component manufacturers in Israel, and as well as a number of technology companies there. At least the ones that I've spoken with, that we've been involved with, have told us that there's no impact to their operations, given the current situation. It's really been more of a conversation around the logistics aspect of getting the finished goods out of the country. There's been reduced flights into Tel Aviv. You may have seen in the news all the commercial airlines were pretty much canceling flights. So that's really reduced the capacity to get product out. But most of the suppliers that we're talking to, either their operations aren't impacted or they're essentially dual sourced or manufacturing the same part numbers in other locations as well. So it's really a logistics concern right now. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it stays that way. But if the conflict escalates, it could impact more of the infrastructure within the country, and we'd be watching for that closely.
Yeah, and it's certainly it's a really significant technology area anyway, from a customer point of view, from a R&D point of view, from a VC, a new product point of view. And it kind of just underlines what we're seeing in terms of geopolitical disruptions, concerns about globalization, and maybe some anti-globalization feeling, and how that impacts our supply chain. What are you hearing from customers? What are customers' expectations with respect to how you respond to geopolitical unrest and how you adapt and modify your supply chain to suit?
Customers are very interested to know country of origin of their major parts and sub-assemblies. They want to have a sense of where is everything coming from and where is it being put together physically at Benchmark. And this generally gets into the conversation of localization or regionalizations of the supply chains. It's very much viewed as a negative today to hear that certain parts or assemblies are coming from across an ocean to be assembled somewhere else. So customers are very sensitive to that. And during the onboarding process, especially if it's a new product introduction that they're bringing to market, that's your chance to set it up correctly from the start. And that's really the expectation. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, if it's an existing product, due to tooling costs or some test equipment or just startup NRE, it's not always feasible. But it's always part of the discussion for sure.
When you look at it specifically to the North American geography, to where you are with your, you've got good capacity in the US, but you've got great capacity in Mexico as well. Is mm-hmm. there a continuous shift in demand to those regions from Asia?
Yeah, the reshoring trend has not let off the gas whatsoever since the last time you and I spoke a few months back, and it's been strong all year. And if anything, it's probably only increasing. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with more customers today and working on more reshoring projects than I have all year over the course of the time frame since the pandemic. And there is quite a bit of demand. And capacity, I think, is a little bit of a concern, yes, at the EMS level in terms of finding the floor space and the capacity for it. We tend to look at Mexico as a low-cost region for higher volume production runs. But even at the sub-tier level, it's a lot easier to find, for example, a machine shop in the United States where you can get good manufacturing experts on the phone who have collectively 20, 30 years of experience each to talk to you about a design and give you feedback on a print. While there's a lot of really good suppliers in Mexico, it's a lot harder to find the ones like that. A lot of them are new. They're just starting up and they're trying to take advantage and get into play with the reshoring trend. I'm grateful they are. We need that expansion. But it does take some time to get that competency level up so that you don't have to make something before you know something on it won't work.
Yeah, Yeah, and it becomes, you know, a key part of your job, doesn't it? It becomes really critical that you understand what's available in each geography. You also understand what's developing and you keep an eye on that. So when it is ready, you can plug it in, because it may well be that using the US sources is great in terms of expertise, a little bit higher in terms of costs, maybe coming down in cost because they're automating more. And maybe when Mexico comes on board, that'll be a more economic, perhaps more scalable model. You have to keep a really close eye on what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah. And try to really get to know your suppliers well down there and understand what their capabilities are. And that's always been a challenge. You almost have to go and see at the Gemba, really walk through a supplier and understand what their manufacturing processes are, and see, is the product moving through the factory similar to what I want to put in there, to really get a feel for, is this a good fit or not? And we're doing that more and more today in Mexico. Actually, I'll be going next week. So I'll get to do some of that.
Okay. Well, next week's a great time to go, because you've got SMTA Guadalajara on down there as well. So if you're down in Guad, there's a trade show, I think, on Wednesday and Thursday. But I'm with you 100%. You know, when I go to visit a factory, it's great when they give me the PowerPoint presentation in the boardroom, but I'm like, why don't we talk about this while we walk the factory floor? Because then you really get to understand what's going on. The big topic that we've talked about time and time again is the supply chain shortages, component shortages. That seems to be easing, not in every area, but in most areas. What are you seeing in terms of supply and demand balance?
Yeah, so it's the conversation generally goes to supply. We talk about this. You talk about lead time and cost. So lead times have certainly stabilized. The data shows us that across almost all commodity types, whether it's passive semiconductors, even the PCB boards themselves, we do see a stabilization of the lead times. And in some cases, as you dial it into, you know, is it a resistor or is it an EEPROM, you might even be able to say it's come down in terms of lead time. And when you chart the data, it certainly looks like it has come down significantly from the peak that we saw during the pandemic timeframe. However, it still is. Lead times in general are still higher than they were than before the pandemic, than what we refer to as 2019 levels. Mm-hmm. And with that, customers are starting to ask about pricing. You know, if we're not in allocation mode, if we're not in shortage mode, you know, is there
must be a price reduction mode?
Yeah, we must be in price, right? Supply and demand. But unfortunately, due to the input costs in the manufacture of the components, we don't really see that. In fact, the pricing has been pretty sticky, if anything, slightly increasing. And when you look at the environment that we're in, it makes a little bit more sense. You know, at least here in the U.S., inflation is running well over 4%, probably higher where you are in the rest of the world. Yeah. It's a very inflationary environment. The input costs in terms of energy, you see the price of oil is significantly higher now than it was 6 months ago. The various metals that you would use in the manufacturing process are all up double digits from percentage wise from prior to the pandemic. So we don't really see a lot of relief in the short to medium term in terms of pricing. And many of these manufacturers have been pretty consistent when they talk about where they're investing their capital and their additional capacity. It's on the newer technology. It's on the smaller node sizes, which often used in telecom compute, which is where we do see that the prices are coming down. And we mostly blame an oversupply due to the drop in demand for personal electronics. But other than that, within industry, whether it's aerospace or medical, complex industrial, we generally have seen very sticky pricing, if anything, slightly increasing.
Yeah, it's really interesting in what you say about the fact that they're all investing money in capacity, and we're asking them to build up capacity in the regions we want capacity. That costs money, and money is expensive at the moment. So the cost of servicing the borrowing that's perhaps needed for that capital investment is going to filter through into the price of components. So, you know, there's almost a requirement to have enough, you know, enough money in the supply chain, enough profit in the supply chain to build and modify that capacity. That's true for an EMS company.
That's a very good point, Bill. Even the money that was essentially given out to industry through things like the CHIPS Act and similar efforts in Europe and elsewhere, that money went to build factories in the locations we want, but none of these facilities are coming online until well into 2024. Yeah. And even then they need to ramp to production. So we're a little ways away from the glut of supply impacting price.
Yeah, that's that cycle, isn't it? And, you know, one of the things that I think during the whole supply chain shortages that I was hearing a lot, particularly from the C-suite of EMS companies and from OEMs, is this idea of a glass pipeline, this idea of more visibility in the supply chain. And I'm curious not just about that, but about the demand for supply chain technology and supply chain tools. What are you seeing in terms of good stuff coming to the market, stuff that should be in the market? How are you perhaps building up the muscle that you've got in terms of data flow and data management to allow you to have a more agile, more flexible, more visible supply chain going forward?
So we've always bragged about how to customers anyway, about how we have a pretty good world-class suite of software and technology behind what we do at Benchmark. And we really do feel that way between our ERP system to some of the tools we use to analyze the component shortages and provide recommendations to customers. That being said, I do think there's a lot of new, really good technology out there on the horizon. I know a lot of it gets pitched to me. I probably get tapped in on LinkedIn almost daily with some new products. I only have so much time to look at it, but there is some promise, I think, for a lot of good solutions as we look at the integration of generative AI into the process and using that to help understand and make decisions for what we do in the supply chain. But right now, what we're using is we've been incorporating better visibility into our ERP system, so we can kind of see live on the screen as we're making our transactions and viewing BOMs in our normal system, things like end of life data, supply chain risk, to make it more visible, so you don't have to kind of pull it up in another system. We want it right there in front of the supply chain analyst in the factory, so they can use that to make decisions.
Yeah. And it's interesting you mention AI. Obviously, everybody's talking about AI and its potential. And I think we're in that very sharp surge of excitement about it. And we've got to go through the valley of disappointment before we get onto some real use cases. But the way you speak of it as a co-pilot, as a kind of interrogation tool to interrogate the data and to help you make decisions makes sense. I don't see it as something that's going to do, you know, going to do your job. I don't see me interviewing your AI system in the future to talk about how supply chains are looking. Are you doing a lot of work with AI to try and figure out how it can fit into supply chain architecture?
Well, if the AI can do the interview, it can probably ask the questions too, Phil.
Oh, there you go. We're both out of a job.
Let's hope we don't get there just too soon. You know, probably one of the most intriguing use cases I've seen for AI within supply chain is around disruptions. When you have a supply chain disruption, right, whether that's a supplier decommit, some type of natural disaster, what we see happening right now in Israel, whatever it may be, the use case that I've seen at least proposed, not necessarily in an operating environment, but at least proposed, is AI can, if you document what the disruption was and the steps taken to resolve it, if you record enough of those, AI can learn from that. And when these things happen, it can present the commodity manager, the the buyer, the analyst, the chief procurement officer, the CEO, if you need options, like, hey, something really similar happened in 2018. This is what was done to resolve it. Should, you know, and provide recommendations where you kind of, hey, click okay to set this into motion. Yeah. You know, I'm describing it at a very high level, but learning from how we have addressed those things in the past is kind of an intriguing use case for it around supply chain disruption. And I'm looking forward to seeing that kind of develop and advance and maybe find its way into industry here on a large scale.
Yeah. I mean, if it has all of your experience in there and it has all of the experience of multiple of your peers, and it can put all those together, I think that could be a very valuable advisory tool. And again, it's that co-pilot that said this happened before. Last comment on AI is it's only as good as the data it's trained on. So making sure you've got the right data set to train it is going to be hugely valuable in that instance. We'll keep talking. We'll keep an eye on what's going on in Israel. We'll keep an eye on what the next disruption will be. And let's not leave it too long to chat again. Thanks so much for your time, Michael.
Hey, it's been great catching up. Looking forward to talking again soon.